Each week, nearly a dozen movies are released theatrically. 40 films a month, more than 400 a year. That's a plethora of cinema. Too much cinema. You'd have to be an addict to see all that. But don't fret. We've got you covered. This is Cinematics.
Hey everyone, what's up? It's a new week of Cinematics. This is Cinematics episode 232. We actually had to do a re-record or retake because my Wi-Fi is really horrible. Bruce and Eric cannot see me and everything like that. It's weird. Eric and Bruce, can you see me? Am I still a robot on Wi-Fi? Bruce and Eric.
You are, but you are. The sound and video is coming through clear.
Thank you, Bruce. And you can confirm that. You can confirm that motion. You second that emotion.
I mean, as much as I like you to be frozen so I can just stare at you like in a certain pose.
Love it. Thank you. Oh, okay. Very, very good. Thank you, Bruce Perkins. We have a whole bunch of movies this week. Let's just say this, okay? This week we have some spoilerific stuff on two movies called Night Shift and American Dreamer. We will put that a week later on our Cinematics YouTube channel. But if you're a member of our Cinematics Patreon, you will get the spoilers for American Dreamer and Night Shift in your Patreon feed this weekend. That is Cinematics. Patreon members get early access to our spoilers. So that's what we were trying to do and talk about the last time we were, I think, 10 minutes into the show, and I was trying to promote it. And this is, I'm just getting to the quick and promoting it right now. And am I still frozen, guys? Still frozen? No. I'm okay? No. Oh, very, very good. Very good. So everything's good, guys. Just doing a Patreon plug. We have a Patreon bonus episode 2007 this year. It's my pick. Our buddy Ryan Smith, he gave me a movie to actually choose since I don't know how to actually think for myself. I might choose Ryan Smith's movie pick. I forgot what he did. I have to look at his email and I'll go with that. But again, if you're a Patreon member, you also get a vote for the second movie we're going to cover. So that is up for our Patreon. Now, all that aside, this week we have a whole bunch of movies to cover, some really interesting ones, some movies we can't even review right now for this episode because there is a Thursday midday embargo on this film called Damsel, which is on Netflix. It's about a girl and a dragon, and it's very interesting. The actress from Millie Bobby Brown, she's the lead in it. I can't say anything else about that, but we've been watching a whole bunch of movies. That said, Eric, the whole week for you, what have you been up to the last week? Have you been interviewing people, watching great movies?
Yeah, I got a couple interviews coming out. I got Anderson hit me up. He's I don't know what I can and can't say. I'm sure he'll mention it on Film Vault, but I might be doing something for a short, which is looking pretty good. I think I can say that. It is short for Loaded for Bear. Check that out. And I do believe they still have the website up, and he could probably use a few more bones thrown at him. So if you got a couple bucks and you want to throw it towards Loaded for Bear, I mean, he does a whole spiel on Film Vault on like the tax thing of that. But yeah, saw an early cut and it's looking really good. So pretty excited for people to see that.
Okay. So you can't really mention what you're going to be doing with Anderson Cowan. Whatever you're doing, can you do a favor for me and Bruce and the Cinematics Universe family? Can you charge Anderson Cowan top dollar for your services because you are a worthy man? Charge top dollar and then after that, give him the shiv. Ask for some more money. I can do that there.
I'll charge him $69.
$69. What a dangerous position to be in, so to speak. Bruce Perkins, how's the last week been for you, sir?
It's been good. I've seen a couple very long movies and I've seen a bunch of not so long movies. In fact, I saw one very short movie called, what was that? Pickle Surprise. It was like a minute long.
Thank you, Joseph Bridges.
Counteracted the three hour movies we saw.
Is that on Pornhub?
That's a different version.
That's a different surprise. Version.
I saw the third one. It was really good.
No, that was not. There was not the Pornhub. Whatever that's. I don't even know what that site is. But Joseph Bridges, he sent us that Pickle Surprise. Look, Surprise is. I know it's not a euphemism. It's actually a short. It's a weird short. It's really interesting. Joseph Bridges is part of our Cinematics Facebook group family. If you want daily movie recommendations, movie conversations, we have some really great people there over at our Cinematics Facebook group community, one of them being Angie Clark. She's a close friend of all three of us, and Anderson as well, and Mitch Burns. Her granddaughter, Cosette, was in ICU several days ago, and she was going through a lot, and she's now out of the ICU. So Cinematics, cinephiles out there, please pray or give your best thoughts towards our close personal friend, Angie Clark, and her family. She's a really wonderful person. And so Cosette is cute as a button. So, yes, Eric.
Yeah, apparently Cosette's doing quite well, so
Yep,
that's
she's
good to
doing great.
hear. Also, I heard some terrible news this week.
Yes.
Mark Dodd,
Well, what happened? Oh, yes.
Mark Dodson passed away. He did voices for, I think a lot of people would know him from doing the Jabba the Hutt's little sidekick there,
Salacious Crumb.
Salacious Crumb. He
Very
also
good
did
voice.
voices for Gremlins, and I got to meet him at a Comic-Con here in Colorado Springs. And nephew Brandon loves comic books, especially like Iron Man, Spider-Man. He went dressed as Iron Man. And then so we went like throughout the Comic-Con, and I was taking pictures with him, with anyone dressed as like any of the Avengers. So he got pictures with all his Avengers team, and that was cute. And then I wanted to meet Mark Dodson because I love Gremlins, obviously. And he was really cool. That there wasn't much of a line, and he was like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go out for a smoke real quick. You want to come with me?" I'm like, "Sure." So he just went back, started BSing with him for probably about a half hour or so. And then hung out with him and my nephew. He was a really cool guy. And then when I saw they passed away, I was like, "Oh, that really, like, I didn't know him that well, but I, had that close personal time with him." And yeah, he was. I don't know what to say. He was a cool guy, and I just hate to see that he passed away. But
Yeah,
I wanted to bring that up on the show.
that was a very talented person, and it was great that you had that 30 minutes of convo for, and that just over the smoke break. That's really cool that you had a really nice conversation
Yeah,
with him.
he was just like, "I'm going out for a smoke. You want to come with me?" I'm like, "Yeah." In fact, like I was just asking him a bunch of stuff of like voice acting and like just kind of his career in general. That as I do with like the interviews that you'll see here on the Cinematics and Deepest Dream. But yeah, we got talking with him, and then like I even like threw him one of the ideas that I had at the time. I was like, how would someone like me hire you?" And he's like, "I mean, you got my email, so just hit me up." And I was like, "Oh, sweet. I'll be able to work with them someday." Nope, not gonna happen. But
Hey, at least you asked a question.
yeah.
I'm just too chicken, to ask that kind of question for from fellow artists. So now when you want to work with people, there are people like him who are going to be very nice and accommodating. So that's very good memory,
Yeah.
Eric Holmes. Again, rest in peace. And anyways, moving forward, we have some movies to cover, a lot of movies to cover. I have like maybe five or six featured films here on our Google Doc. But let's not bury the lead out of respect to Eric Holmes and most people out there in the universe who watch his movies. We're going to do a very quick mini review of Dune Part 2. We don't need to know. We don't need to give you guys the plot summary. There's spice out there. There's the Harkonnen. There's Freeman. There's people. There's Paul Atreides. Is he the second coming of just this godlike figure? Whatever. All that stuff. I remember the first time I saw Dune. I did a rewatch like you did, Bruce, last week. I liked it. I think I gave it 4 stars and I thought it was too slow. Actually, on a rewatch, Dune wasn't too slow. I'm the one who is too slow on the uptake. I love Dune Part 1, 5 stars like Bruce. Going into the movie on Friday, saw it. Yeah, one of the best movie going experiences in my life. Okay, I remember when my late father took me to Raiders of the Lost Ark, and then when I was able to see it with my Empire Strikes Back, if I recall, with my uncle and aunt way back in the day, and it shaped me as a kid watching those two amazing movies. Not a kid anymore. I'm in my early 50s, but I was taken back to how movies could actually transport me to pretty much another dimension, another time, another place. And I wasn't a kid anymore. I was an old man who felt like a kid upon watching Dune Part 2 because of how beautifully executed the visuals, the writing, the acting, the execution was. So that's my mini review. I think it's a perfect movie. On our Cinematics Facebook group, Jack Fitzpatrick is the lone voice in the crowd who was mentioning how boring he thought Dune Part 1 and Part 2 is. Thankfully, he didn't get too much blowback. People have different strokes for different folks. I think, Jack, I'm glad that you came out with that opinion of it. And I think it's a real small opinion. And I don't know, I don't really see many people not liking Dune Part 2. I'm glad that he actually expressed that because that's I like different opinions. Bruce, different opinion on Dune Part 2, or was it everything I just said? Just a perfect movie all around?
I think it's pretty much everything you just said. I agree. I took oldest son to it. We went and watched it. I loved it. It's funny. You talk about kind of going back to the excitement you had when you were, you know, kid seeing a big blockbuster of whatever sort. And I literally in the last couple of days have been looking up action figures for Dune 2. Like, why am I doing that? Do I need action figures at nearly 60 years old? I do not, but I'm looking at them. I don't know. So I guess I'm having a little bit of that same feeling.
Yeah.
But along with just the spectacle and the amazing execution here, and I'll be really curious to hear Eric's take, because I think the people who are seasoned with the books will have their own version of takes to it, because obviously there's expectation versus adaptation and what they think of it. But not having that kind of investment in it, I love the spectacle, like you talked about. So well executed, so many great epic scenes and action scenes and just special effects that, I mean, sure, a lot of it's probably green screen, but boy, oh boy, do they do a great job on not only making it seem real in that world, but also just executing action. You know, we talk about big action pieces, to execute them so they're not confusing messes like Transformer movies. This movie is a great example of how you execute those big epic scenes and still make them work and understandable. And then the last thing I'd put in this that I think is great, because I think it works on various different levels. If you're going in for this kind of very heady, philosophical, sci-fi, all about the nature, I'm going to kind of keep it vague, but all kind of about the nature of like hero worship and religious and political power and power corrupting or not corrupting, you can get all of that from this. But if you also want to go in and just see like a soap opera, over the top, bigger than life characters, huge moments that are kind of bombastic, you got that. If you want to see, I talked about it in my Bon Appétit post, some damn good costumes, you got that too. There's also weird moments. And once again, I won't talk about it specifically, but there's a moment where someone's wrestling some kind of a creature to make it give up something. And I was just like, holy crap, that's so weird and doesn't need to be in this movie. I mean, it probably is in the book, I'm assuming. But the fact that it's there, I appreciate that too. So, easy 5 stars for me.
Yeah, I mean, you've actually read the book years ago, Bruce. I haven't read the book at all.
Many years ago.
Many years ago. But I mean, at least you still read it when you were a youth.
Yeah.
I have not even touched that book at all. But I really love the character development on a cinematic level. Okay, so let's get to someone who's really in the know of this Dune universe. Eric Holmes, your mini review of Dune Part 2.
I liked it a lot. They left a lot out from the book, but like, for instance, like Paul's Mentat training's like not in there. Anything about Chomes, really not. I can't remember if they mentioned it in the first one or not. I don't think so, but like, that's like something they mentioned in the book. And it's kind of important because now that you've seen the second one, you know that like all the machinations that happen to get Paul where he is very important in the book. But they got the broad strokes right. They got the, you know, main themes down. And it's kind of like they left out a lot, but I think the themes are there. And I think it still worked. If, you know, if you're going to be nitpicky about, oh, I really wanted Dufour Hallwood to come back because he was in the books, it's like, oh, did you need it? Probably not. Like, not for what they're doing here. The broad strokes still work. What I'm really excited about, which is what was made me bite my tongue a lot when the first one came out, was when the first one came out, there was a bunch of, oh, another white savior movie. And I'm biting my tongue going, this is not that. Yes, it is. He's a white savior, blah, blah, blah. He's going in like, wait till the second one comes out. And sure enough, the second one comes out. And I have not heard any of that. So I think it kind of worked to where it was going. For the, you know, the people that are familiar with the story and familiar with the book, they know exactly what I'm talking about. The people that saw Dune 2 now know what I'm talking about, but I don't know how far we want to go into spoilers. I don't think
we do not want to go far at all on that.
I think the book, the gut punch at the end of the book was a lot stronger than the movie was. That said, the books or the movie still went there. I wish it would have went a little further. But I mean, judging by from what I hear of people that saw it, they're kind of getting what the, you know, whole point was. So that works. And yeah, I dig it. It's not like I Am Legend where I read I Am Legend, go, oh, this is so good. And then you watch the movie and it's like, you messed everything. You completely missed the point of everything the book was trying to say. This, even though it skipped a bunch of stuff from the book, it didn't miss the point at all. And it right. kept with the themes. And in fact, I think Chani in the movie, I think her character is actually better in the movie than she is in the book. Because,
Very good.
and we would have to go into spoilers as to why, but there's some changes they made to her character in the movie that I think just work way better.
Okay.
She has the best reaction shot to something late in the movie where she kind of goes like, "Oh hell, you didn't."
All right, Dune Part Two. Look, Bruce coined it, five-star classic. So for me, Dune Part Two is a five-star classic because as much as we're going to love so many films in this year, for me, it will be hard to top Dune Part Two, especially seeing in the theater. I'm gonna buy the Blu-ray, whatever the 4K, whatever version. I'm all about it. It will be hard to top this movie as my number one film this year. Five-star classic for me. Bruce, your rating?
Yeah, I think I don't know. Yeah, I think that's fair. I was thinking back on it. It's five stars easy, but honestly, yeah, I think it's a five star classic. It's just going to get better, and it's already five stars. So yeah, I
It's
agree.
making you regress to your childhood, Bruce. That means five-star classic.
It's true.
Either that or you are suffering from onset dementia.
Could be that
So,
too. Could be that
okay,
too. Could be
maybe
both.
both.
Two things can be true. You've heard this before.
Okay, so five-star classics for me and Bruce. Eric, you're the reader, so you actually have a huge discerning level. What is your rating on Dune Part Two?
Kind of want to go 4.5 only because I wanted more ornithopters and I still want an ornithopter, but yeah, it captured everything it needed to, and again, didn't have everything from the book, but it had all the important elements and wove them together nicely and improved on some elements.
Okay, so 4.5 stars from Eric Holmes and five
Oh
star
no,
class.
oh no, we're going 5.
Oh, we're gonna go
Yeah,
five?
I'm just
Okay.
gonna imagine there were more ornithopters in it.
Okay. I love those ornithopters. They're very, very good. So, anyways, if you haven't seen Dune Part Two in your local Cineplex, please do. It's just a great, grand experience. Now, I'm gonna say this: the next movie we're going to review right now will not be as good as Dune Part Two because it's the rest of this episode will be a come down, okay? To Dune Part Two. That said, there might be hidden values from the movies we're gonna cover. First up is American Dreamer. It's in select theaters and on demand March 8th. It's based on a true story. How much of it is a true story? This is from Chicago Public's radio story segment, The American Life. We don't know how much of it's real or not, but it is based on a true story. Okay, so it's a very fantastical story. Phil Loder, played by Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones fame, he is a very disgruntled economic professor. He actually has American society correct how the 1%ers feed off the middle class and the lower middle class, and the wealth is pretty much right there at the top, and hardly anyone in this world can afford a decent, not just live on a decent wage, but afford a decent home. And his main goal is to find a nice home for himself, but not just a nice home. He wants to find a really big home. He has huge expectations, but he only makes a certain amount of money as a college professor. He's not even in emeritus, he's not tenured, but he believes he actually expects a bigger house than his actual salary commands. So he on the classifieds one day, he sees a deal where for $240,000 he can purchase a home, not fully purchase it, but it comes with a caveat. He will live in the home where the owner is currently. That owner is played by Shirley MacLaine. And after the owner of the home passes, then that $240,000 investment will be a great one because then supposedly Phil Loder will take over the house. That is the premise of American Dreamer. So, but the problem is there might be a catch. The woman who owns a home, she might have a lot of kids, or maybe not. She's led a mysterious life. So as he uncovers her world, he starts becoming a little bit more, not too much of a dreamer, but he becomes a little bit more of a pessimist. The movie co-stars Kim Quinn, Danny Pudi, Danny Glover, and Matt Dillon. By the way, Danny Glover and Matt Dillon, Eric and Bruce, do you remember what movie they starred in together?
Danny Glover and Matt Dillon?
Yes, I think Eric might kick himself for missing this one.
I probably will.
Okay, the
Is it not something
right.
about Mary, is it? No. I feel
It's
like it was one of
The
theirs.
Saint of Fort Washington, a movie
Oh,
from
wow.
years ago. Oh, you guys have never heard of that movie? Look it up.
No.
It's a very interesting film, a really good movie.
I thought maybe Matt Dillon had like an uncredited part in Predator 2 or something.
I love Predator 2, by the way. I saw Predator 2 in the theaters. I love that movie so much. Also, Michelle Mylett, she's also in it. You might know her from, what is it, Letterkenny, that really popular Canadian series, Letterkenny. So, American Dreamer, interesting movie. The problem is Phil Lord himself is a highly unlikable character, and he's narcissistic, and he makes a lot of bad decisions. But I ended up loving him because loving the story. And I thought Shirley MacLaine was really great in it. But again, the barrier to entry will be, we haven't used that in a while. Barrier to entry would be if you do not like, if you want likable characters as your quote unquote protagonist, this movie might not be it. But for me, this movie was it. American Dream, running at 98 minutes. Let's start with you, Eric Holmes. You saw it today. Your thoughts on the film?
Oh, well, first of all, I disagree. I did like Peter Dinklage's character. He played Kurt Loder's brother, I believe. Or Dr. Phil's cousin, one of the two. But I really love Peter Dinklage in this. And he's a great actor, obviously. But I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever seen him in a starring role. Was it like was he in a movie like a station agent or something like that?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I didn't see that. So this is like the first movie I can, usually he's got like bit parts and other stuff. So it was great seeing him kind of as the lead in this. And I like this. In fact, they got that Toxic Avenger movie coming out, the Macon Blair one. I can't wait for that. Cause I believe he plays Toxie in that. So, but yeah, this is probably one of his best roles I've seen him in, and he's played in some bangers previously. Matt Dillon, obviously playing an a-hole, could have used more of him, but
real estate agent.
Yeah, glad we got what we got.
Yeah,
Shirley MacLaine's even a bit of an a-hole, and she's a great a-hole. Like, I guess story-wise, it kind of goes well. It started going where I thought it would, and then they had like the Nine Lives aspects to it. I won't go much further than that, but. Yeah, I dug the story, dug the characters, dug pretty much everything about this. This is kind of one of those kind of feel good movies, but it's not saccharine. It still has a bit of edge to it, I think.
Yeah,
probably because of how the characters interact with each other. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, I dug this one. I think it's from the Theodore Melfi,
right?
Melfi,
Saint
who
Vincent.
Wrote.
Saint
so,
Vincent.
Like, I remember not remembering Saint Vincent. And what was the
Hidden Figures?
Hidden Figures. Hated that movie.
The Starling, Netflix. Yeah,
that didn't was see the Starling.
One. Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say I hated Hidden Figures. It just I thought they could have leaned more on their side. This is not a Hidden Figures review, but I like this one a lot. This one was like kind of uplifting, but not saccharine, and yeah, it had just enough edge to it to kind of, you know, give it a little more than what I think a movie like this would otherwise be.
I'm very cool. I'm very happy that you got that. You like the movie. I was wondering if you guys would like this movie. That said, Bruce, are you going to levy some bad taxes on this movie? Are you going to?
It was fine. It was. Yeah, it didn't really move the needle much for me. It was very sitcom-y to me. It's like a very sitcom kind of setup. You know, like, hey, what if a guy wants to get a house, like, buys the house, but the condition is that the woman has to die before he gets the house. And in the meantime, he has to live in the, quote, I don't know, servants' quarters or something kind of. And then, like, will she ever die? You know? Meanwhile, he's having romances with every woman that crosses his path, conveniently.
Literally.
pretty much. And then I was really disappointed by how much slapstick stuff they had him do. I mean, honestly, I was like, why is he doing so much slapstick in this movie? Like, he was constantly falling in and out of things and banging his head and hurting his hand. And I was just like, it seemed way too goofy. But even though I know it was a comedy, it seemed like too goofy for the comedy they were going for. This seems like the obvious path for this movie is gruff guy that just wants something material, doesn't have any path for his life, trying to do any kind of scam he can to get ahead. Meets old lady who has everything and learns how to become a little more of a human being and appreciate life and the better and the real things in life. That's kind of the path you're expecting in this movie. But then they throw in a bunch of like straight slapstick stuff. So for me, it was like great pieces. I mean, all the stuff you said about Dinklage and everybody else, great. They're all great. Script, not so much.
Okay. Final ratings and thoughts on American Dreamer. Yeah, I think Eric really put it bluntly and accurately where he said It wasn't saccharine, and it had a little bit of an edge to it. I like the edge behind American Dreamer. It actually had, for me, a little bit of genuine emotion, but not saccharine, because these are not saccharine sentimental people. So it's great how they process some of that emotional stuff in this movie. A really unique film for me. So for me, American Dreamer, I'm giving it 4 out of 5 stars. 4 stars for me. What about you, Eric?
I'll probably go 3.5 on this one. Kind of, I think on a rewatch, it could probably go up.
Probably go up. What about you, Bruce?
I'd probably go 2.5, near miss.
Near miss from Bruce Berkey. 2.5 from Bruce Berkey. 4 stars for me. 3.5 from Eric for American Dreamer. Again, in select theaters on demand March 8th. Next up is Night Shift in theaters and VOD March 8th. It stars Phoebe Tonkin from the Netflix series. What is it called, Bruce?
Boy Swallows Universe, and she has a huge role in that show too.
Is
She
she good
does
in
a
that
lot.
movie?
Yeah, she's in that series. She has a lot of emotional range, like more than you would know from this movie, I would say for sure.
Okay, I hope. I don't. That's not a take on the movie. Okay, I think Bruce secretly
No,
is
but
in
she isn't
love.
really, she isn't required to do a bunch of stuff in this either. So, yeah.
Right. That's true. That is very true. Now, Phoebe Tonkin, she plays a woman who's sort of in desperate need of something. She needs a job. So the movie starts off with her just driving up to this motel. It's called a tucked-in motel, or the tucked-in away, or tucked-in motel or something. I forget what it's called.
The
But yes.
tucked in,
Tucked in.
INN.
Yeah, the tucked in, INN. Right, the tucked in. Very good. Thank you, Eric Holmes. So she
It's
actually
right
has a
next to
job.
RuPaul's Drag Race. I think it's staying right next to
Right. And so
that.
Phoebe.
And heart and soul restaurant.
Right. So her name is Gwen. She's Gwen Taylor. She's a young woman. The hotel's a remote hotel. She gets a job as a night shift sort of manager of this, or clerk of this motel. First night on the job, the first maybe 10, 12 minutes has the previous shift person, Lamorne Morris, giving her the lay of the land, what the motel's about. It's pretty seedy. There's cockroaches. There's a bear, the head of a bear on the wall. You could see it just decorating. It's just very tacky and cheesy. But this motel might also have its share of seedy characters, and you get to actually see a couple of people who might not be the most normal people in the world. And then also, who knows, there might be some spirits or supernatural elements in this night shift of a motel. And Gwen Taylor, again played by Phoebe Tonkin, she's just trying to survive her shift. She needs the money, she needs the gig, but there are some interesting elements that are slowly making her feel very, very uncomfortable. Co-stars Madison Hugh as a teenager who is sort of one of the motel. She's spending the night at the motel as well. And then there's also a couple, a rich couple who comes in the middle of the movie and with some very huge demands, and they're a bunch of a-holes. One of them is played by Patrick Fischler. He's a very good character actor. So that is the premise of Night Shift. It is written and directed by Paul and Ben China. They are twin brothers, they're known as the China Brothers. I told Eric Holmes that the movie's only 82 minutes. Okay, so this is a quick watch. It's a horror thriller kind of movie. Bruce, Night Shift, did it work for you?
Some parts of it work for me. This is one of those movies where it's kind of easy because it's like really focused, right? You've got one crazy night. What's going to happen in one crazy night? Like one of those kind of movies, kind of, where it's like she's in this setting, very unsettled. She doesn't know what to expect, and things just keep happening weirder and weirder. Now, I think they're very obviously they are fans of Psycho, because there's a lot of references to Psycho, not just being a motel out in the middle of nowhere, but you've got all these weird things, like they've got the pool that's empty with a pit in the bottom of it. Like, whoa, things buried in there. It's just like the backyard area seems to be full of old cars and stuff. It's like, whoa, are they murdering people here or something? There's a strange car that just keeps driving by very slowly, like checking her out or something. There's a lot of things where you're basically put in the position of, is she paranoid? Is someone really out to get her? Are there ghosts? Are there not? Is there someone there going to be a murderer? There's all those kind of, that's kind of the basic idea. Now, the question is, how do you pay that off and make it really awesome? And this could go a variety of different directions. Unfortunately, the directions it goes in for me were pretty kind of tropey. There's supposed to be some some turns and reveals that are supposed to kind of amaze me. I wasn't hugely amazed, let's just say that. There's also a few setups for things. Like, there's this very obvious setup, like when she's being given the tour of the place, a la Hitchcock giving us the tour of the Bates Motel in the trailer. So they're like, there's this room. If you go in here, you make sure you put the brick in front of the door. If you put the don't put the brick in front of the door, you're going to be trapped in here and locked in. No one's going to be able to get you out. Okay. Okay, Chekhov's gun. I see you. You know, you're waiting. You're waiting to pay this off. Once again, kind of like the whole movie, that payoff is kind of a fizzle. And for me, the whole movie's payoff is kind of a fizzle with a lot of great elements. And I would say overall, I had a pretty good time with this. I'll probably give it a slightly positive review, but I love the actors. Even the minor actors that we get, you know, the people you mentioned are all doing great work here. I think it looks really good. It's a great little setting. I just don't think what they did there was a hugely awesome, in my opinion. So it was pretty good. Good enough that I would watch it. This is on streaming. It was a Saturday night, and I was like, I don't know what to watch. And I just came by this, and I clicked it on. I would watch the whole thing, and I'd feel okay about it.
Cool. Derek?
Yeah, this was starting off really good. And I was getting all excited for it. And then they started doing the jump scare noise, like the fake jump scares. I'm like, oh, okay. All right, whatever. And then the movie starts going on. Then they do another fake jump scare. I'm like, guys, trying to build tension. What do jump scares do? They relieve tension. So if you have a jump scare every 5 seconds, it's hard to build tension, because once you do the jump scare, you have to build tension again. And they keep doing the jump scares. They did the Chekhov's brick, as Bruce mentioned. What else? We'll get into more stuff and spoilers. There was so many kind of okay. So Bruce mentioned this movie looks great. It does. The actors are committed. It's got that one guy in it, the guy that's at the end of Red State, and I don't know his name. It was cool. So he, in the movie, he was the a-hole. Him and his wife show up.
Patrick Fischler.
Oh, that's his name? Cool. Yeah, that guy's awesome. He shows up. I'm like, cool, it's him. The settings and everything looks good, but it felt like this was a spoof movie. Like, they were setting up a bunch of tropes of horror. And if that's the case, this movie's brilliant. If that's not the case, this movie's terrible. And I can't. And the thing is, I can't tell which one it is. But what I do know is that whether this is a terrible thriller or a brilliant horror spoof, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I think you guys, because I kept posting in the message thing,
yeah,
as I was watching it. So you kind of got my play-by-play. But this is definitely a high recommend. Just know that it's either a brilliant spoof or a completely stupid horror movie. And I'm not sure which one. I'm honestly not sure which one it is.
But again, if it was still a stupid horror movie, you enjoyed it, right? It's still enjoyable because of what final product, right?
The thing is, if it's a stupid horror movie, I'm probably laughing at it for the wrong reasons. If it's a brilliant horror or a brilliant spoof movie, I'm laughing at it for the exact right reasons. But
yes. Well, without giving too much, we're going to talk about spoilers, folks, after we're done recording
on the
this.
Patreon. Check us out.
On the Patreon.
Except for the filmmakers, they're probably like, screw air. We're not doing Patreon. In which case, fair play.
Oh, Eric and Bruce do not know this. I interviewed the China Brothers today. They spent about two and a half minutes talking about the ending. So, yeah. So we're gonna actually talk about the movie, and then on top of that, Bruce and Eric, I'm gonna put their spoilers right after our conversation. So that should be.
Do you have any?
Which one?
Any insight on whether this was a spoof or not?
No idea.
I'm not pulling anyone's chain. I honestly have no idea.
We're gonna have Bruce do the dirty work, and we're gonna have Bruce on Instagram. Just DM the China Brothers. Are you guys the makers of a stupid horror movie, or is it actually a really cool spoof?
So I heard you guys are twins. Can you tell me?
Here's an example. There's someone that comes in the hotel. This is kind of late, but I think I can say this without any spoilers. There's someone that shows up at the hotel, and they're no one. And all of a sudden the music starts going, the music starts getting intense. And what's her name? I suck at anagrams and I forgot her name.
Gwen Taylor. Yeah.
Yeah, so Gwen's getting real nervous about this person, but the character's not doing anything to warrant her reaction.
Right.
And so it's like the character is reacting to the music from the movie,
That's just a weird.
other than what's going on.
Huh, interesting.
But then there's a thing, so
Yes, there's a
maybe that
thing.
happened, maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, I think
Yeah,
it
we'll
makes
have
a
to,
lot of
we'll definitely have to get into spoilers. But I mean,
Okay.
there's stuff like that where it's like characters reacting to stuff that only the audience or the filmmaker should know seems off.
Okay.
That
All
and a
right.
pair of scissors just happened to be there. All right,
Interesting.
cool.
So Night Shift. All right. Ratings. I'm giving it 4 stars. I liked it. Spoiler stuff, though. I can't mention why I actually specifically liked it because there's stuff that happens in the third act that I really enjoyed. But 4 stars for me. What about you, Bruce?
I'll probably go 3 stars, and I think that Eric is definitely on to something there. I feel like for me, I think I agree. It's like a great satire slash spoof slash sly comedy that doesn't quite tip it enough to fully land, but it is still entertaining in its own right enough.
Very cool. Eric Holmes.
Yeah, it's 5 stars.
5 stars for Eric Holmes.
And I wasn't lying about that. This is either like just a stupid movie and that I had a great time watching, or this is a brilliant satire that I also had a great time watching. I think you
Okay.
should check out Night Shift. Just know what you're getting into. But yeah, this movie is as good as Dune 2.
Wow. You just did that just so I could put that on an Instagram reel or on TikTok, didn't you? That's amazing. But that's
So
really good.
to the filmmakers, if you're pissed at me, you can have that. Night Shift is as good as Dune 2. That's yours. You're welcome.
That is amazing. Okay, finally, our
And
featured
you can
film.
watch Night Shift twice in the same time you can watch one Dune 2.
There you go. There you go.
Very
It's like
good.
what, like
That
80
makes it
minutes, something
twice as
like that?
good, right? That makes it twice as good as Dune 2.
Are you egging Eric on, Bruce?
Night Shift is twice as good as Dune 2. Eric Holmes Cinematics.
They're very, very good. Love it. I love it. 5 stars from Eric Holmes. Oh my God, we're totally fired next week. 4 stars from me, and then 3 stars from Bruce Perky. Bruce Perky, take a siesta. We're leaving you out of this one because there's a movie called 5 Pounds of Pressure. It's on digital and on demand March 8th. It stars Luke Evans,
Oh, that's me after a Mexican meal. Oh, my God.
Rory Culkin and Alex Pettifer. Okay. This is Eric correctly in his interview with the director. I forgot the name of the director. He's,
Alaco.
I'm sorry?
Phil Alaco.
Phil Alaco. Thank you, Eric Holmes.
Or Loco,
He
one of the two.
specifically said this movie reminded him of Magnolia. And the reason why he said in that interview it reminds him of Magnolia is because 5 Pounds of Pressure centers around in the neighborhood of the, I think, Red Hook. Where's Red Hook? Like Red Hook, Brooklyn or New York? It's an area in New York. And it's about several people storylines in New York. And there's a little bit of a spoiler, which I'm not going to mention, but Luke Evans, he's an ex-con. The movie starts and he's finishing up his parole. Gets a job as a bar. He has a job as a bartender in his local neighborhood. He's trying to reconnect with his son, who he hasn't really had contact with because he was in jail all of these years. His son is a troubled son as well. He's also trying to reconnect with the mother of his child too. So there's that story. Then there's another story regarding a kid, a fellow youth. He's like maybe in his early 20s. He's having problems with his girlfriend. He's having problems. His mother is not in good health because of a certain situation that happened to their family. Alex Pettifer plays this low-level crime guy who deals guns and drugs, and he's the uncle, pretty much a father figure to Rory Culkin's character. So there's a lot of different elements involved. And you like Rory Culkin a lot, right? Eric Holmes from that movie.
Rory Culkin and his cowboy hat.
And his cow. Oh, yeah. And his cow. Yeah. Rory Culkin has a cowboy hat through a lot of the movie. So these are intersecting stories. And what happens is you get to get pieces of the stories from the narrative. If this is your kind of movie, if you like these type of Magnolia type Robert Altman movies, this might be a movie for you. I think those were some really good performances. Overall, I liked some of the stories a little bit more than the other stories. That's the risk you run when you have this kind of genre film. But ultimately, I thought it was a pretty solid enough drama. So I'm giving it 3.5 out of 5 stars. This is a 3.5 star out of 5 star, like solid recommend. Some really good acting from Luke, especially Luke Evans is very, very good, as well as Rory Culkin, and some really good acting across the board. Eric, your thoughts on 5 pounds of Pressure?
Yeah, I like this one quite a bit. This was kind of like Magnolia, as far as the different characters, different stories all come together at the end. Also, in tone, it reminded me a lot of The Drop, that kind of crime thriller, dealing a lot with the poster makes it look like it might be more of an action movie, and it's kind of not. It's definitely more of a drama. And a lot of themes of like forgiveness of other people's and oneself as well. Definitely has some family themes as movies like this tend to do. Yeah, I would say if you like imagine The Drop with the narrative of Magnolia, that's kind of what 5 pounds of Pressure is. And I'd say give it a shot.
Again, there's some really good performances in this film, especially Luke Evans's work. I really like his stuff, but a lot of these actors, even Alex Pettifer, he's good in this movie. Everyone has their sort of moment to shine in this film. Again, so for me, 3.5 out of 5. What was your rating, Eric Holmes?
I'll probably go 4 stars on this one. And also kind of want to point out Rory Culkin. We talked about his cowboy hat, but he's also kind of like this wormy kind of guy that always gets himself into trouble and somehow worms his way out. And he's a real fun character. And yeah, there's some good stuff here.
So check out 5 pounds of pressure
Check
on.
it out.
Check it out.
Pull
Right,
the
right.
trigger
Pull
with
the trigger.
5 pounds of pressure on each finger.
Yes, on digital and on demand, specifically on March 8th. Oh, yes.
If this is playing in theaters, I would actually go to the theater to watch this.
Yeah,
I
would.
don't like it doesn't have the big grandeur that like a Dune does, but this feels kind of like I mentioned Drop or Seven or like one of those kind of gritty type movies. I think it'd look good in the theater if it's playing near you. That I don't know.
Okay, so I thought it was playing in the theaters, but right now I'm looking at a Lionsgate email. It says only on digital and on demand,
Oh.
March 8th.
Then ignore me. Never watch it in a theater is what it is.
All movies also watched this week include Damsel, a dragon, sort of a dragon infused movie starring Millie Bobby Brown. She plays a woman who is trapped in this. In the mountains with this dragon who is about to eat her. That is not a spoiler because that is the premise. You've seen the trailer for Damsel. I'm sure a lot of people have seen the trailer. I cannot review it because of the embargo. So there's no rating for this, actually, Eric Holmes, unfortunately. I also saw this movie called Accidental Texan, which stars Thomas Hayden Church, Carrie Ann Moss, and Rudy Pankow. Rudy Pankow, by the way, Eric Holmes, is the son of Luke Evans's character in 5 Pounds of Pressure. Rudy
Oh,
Pankow
there
in
you
this
go.
movie, yeah, Rudy Pankow actually has a way bigger role in Accidental Texan. He plays a actor who, on the first day of a very big job, he messes up really bad, and he gets fired. And so he decides to leave the set in New Orleans and travels. Somewhere his car breaks down somewhere in a remote area of Texas, and he becomes friends with this oil rigger or oil driller played by Thomas Hayden Church, and he ingratiates himself into the lives of the Thomas Hayden Church's character and the members of the community. And the movie is based on the Cole Thompson novel Chocolate Lizards. Some really good acting from Thomas Hayden Church and Rudy Pankow. They have a very good chemistry. Carrie Ann Moss plays a waitress at the local diner. Who maybe has eyes for the Thomas Hayden Church character? This is one of the. It's directed by Mark Bristol. It's a simple drama, but it's really well told. This fish out of water tale. You might think it would be just a movie for some e made for some easy laughs, but I really like the human drama behind Accidental Texan. We mentioned feel good movie. This is a very feel good movie about fathers and sons and. Any movie with Thomas Hayden Church in it, he's very believable. And towards the end, I did get almost a little bit teary-eyed towards the end of Accidental Texan. So my rating for Accidental Texan, 4 out of 5 stars, definitely a recommend if you're looking for a really interesting family drama
Quick
in theaters on March 8th.
question. Did they what is can you say what Accidental Texan is without spoilers? Because
No, no.
in my head I'm like you
Well,
trip and fall. Oops, I'm a Texan. That's
Yeah, so Rudy Pankow, he's a character at the beginning. He's an actor And he once he screws up his job and he gets fired from his job in New Orleans, he becomes an accidental Texan by journeying to Texas and get learning about the Texan way. So it's about him
Oh.
actually. Yeah, he's an
So it's
actor.
exactly as I described. He tripped, fell, and became
Exactly.
a
Yeah,
Texan.
pretty much tripped. Yeah, and see, instead of with his knees and with his feet, it was actually with his car. So very cool movie. Hopefully you guys get to see it down the line when it's streaming. It's one of these innocuous feel-good dramas. So 4 out of 5 stars for me. And moving forward, we have the box. We have some box pick. It's Prince of the City. But before we get to the box, Phil Aloco, right? Eric Holmes. His pick for the box, Bruce, are two movies that you can add to your box: Little Murders from Alan Arkin and The Ninth Configuration from Exorcist writer William Peter Blatty. Have you heard of these movies, Bruce?
Yeah, I've seen The Ninth Configuration. I read the book too, I think back in the 70s or something.
Oh, how was the movie? Did you like it when you saw it?
I don't remember much about it, but I know it's had quite a cult resurgence in the last 10 or 15 years. So I've been meaning to rewatch that movie one of these days. It's kind of a weird oddity because it got so connected with The Exorcist, but it has nothing to do with that really. I think it takes place in an asylum that's in an old, like, building, Gothic building. I have, man, I don't remember. I'm gonna be bad about this one.
Okay, and Little Murders is considered a cult. Not, I don't know if it's a cult classic, but it's a cult film from Alan Arkin. So I've heard stuff over the years about Little Murders as well.
Gonna add
So,
it to the box right now if you guys didn't already add it. So
yeah,
I'll do that.
thank you, sir. Thank you, Bruce. So this week's box pick is Prince of the City. It's directed by Sidney Lumet. It stars Treat Williams. I have not seen this movie in years. All I do know is Treat Williams, rest in peace. He passed away, I think, was it last year or maybe a couple of years ago? I interviewed him years ago and I asked him about Prince of the City because coincidentally, this never really happens. This hasn't happened too much in my 30 years of doing this. I was going to interview him for some TV movie and then I said, okay, well, let me watch a movie. I'll see one of his movies. Oh, Prince of the City. So I put it on, blown away by his performance. And my initial thought of that movie was, why was Treat Williams, after Prince of the City, not a bigger? You say he had a great career, but why wasn't he a bigger star after Prince of the City? Maybe the answer was when Prince of the City was released back in the day, it wasn't a huge box office hit. It didn't launch him to the next stratosphere, but he considers that, if I recall what he said, he was talking about how much he was proud of his performance in Prince of the City. So that's my setup for Bruce's box pick. Bruce, tell us about Prince of the City, and you and Eric can review it from there.
Well, Sidney Lumet in 1981. I did see some interesting trivia, which I don't know if you'd caught this, Greg. I guess originally this was slated for De Palma to do. And there was a weird thing where De Palma and Pacino were going to do it. And then somehow they got flopped around. And of course, they ended up doing Scarface instead. So I thought that was kind of interesting that there was a De Palma connection to this. But the basic idea is this: is you got Treat Williams playing Danny, and he's the head of the, what do they call him, like a drug enforcement team on the New York police force. And they kind of have carte blanche and they could just kind of do whatever they want. And most of them are dirty cops. They're doing a lot of stuff. They're getting a lot of money and who knows what on the side. And you kind of see that right out of the gate. And the bulk of this movie is, and it's kind of interesting. We should talk about this because exactly what Danny, what Danny's motivation is, but he basically decides to turn evidence to the feds and start wearing wires. And he's deep in at this time with tons of people. So a good chunk of this movie is him, doing that. But at the same time, you never feel like he's remorseful, that remorseful, or that he really is wanting to change his life. It's almost like he was a rock star in one realm. And he kind of has this weird thing where he just kind of wants to become a star informant. He wants to prove how awesome he is. And the only thing he has is he will not rat on any of his crew. Like right when he decides to go state evidence, they split up his crew basically because he says, I don't want to be like next to them anymore. So I can't be involved in, convicting them. but I'll wear wires and everybody else and do whatever you guys want. Just keep me safe and keep my friends safe. That's kind of the basic premise of this. This plays, I can see why wouldn't it be a hit, because this in a lot of ways plays out almost like a Goodfellas or a gangsters movie. But in this case, the gangsters are the cops, pretty much the cops throughout this movie. So I think that's probably a really hard sell. This is also one of those kind of gritty late 70s, early 80s era New York. And it really feels it. Like there's a ton of location shooting in this movie. But I found a lot of good stuff in this movie. I thought it was pretty fascinating. It is long. We talked about long movies. It's about a 3-hour movie. That was another quote of Lumet that I read, is that he said he wanted to make this at least 3 hours when he made this movie originally, which it comes up under 3 hours, but still he got pretty close. I think this is a pretty great movie, especially if you like 70s, 80s crime, cop, gritty New York type movies. I think this is in the bag for you. For some people, if they don't like that kind of more of a vintage style or that kind of subject matter, it might kind of be dated for them. But I think it holds up really well, for me at least.
I would say this is probably bottom tier Sidney Lumet, but that's still pretty good.
Bottom tier? Really? Wow.
Keep in mind, this is bottom tier Sidney Lumet. This is not a bottom tier movie.
Sorry, Eric. So, for example, you prefer something like Night Falls on Manhattan over Prince of the City?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's like saying this movie is Quentin Tarantino's worst movie. Well, it's still a 9 out of 10 movie, like, you know, okay. But we're splitting hairs here. I did want to point out the writer, J. Preston Allen, who also wrote Lord of the Flies, The Verdict. I had uncredited rights on The Verdict, Death Trap, Prince of the City, Star is Born from 76, Funny Lady. Like, she's got a pretty good IMDb there. Like, it's a good gritty cop drama. I still prefer 5 Pounds of Pressure, but this is kind of the I think 5 Pounds of Pressure and Prince of the City are kind of in the same ballpark, sort of. I'm trying to figure out, like, what didn't capture me. Because, like, you have stuff like Dog Day Afternoon or Serpico or 12 Angry Men. Like, it's pretty clear what the point of the movie is. This one kind of takes a while to get going. Like, you know that they're dirty cops, but then there's like a little too much intrigue and it gets a little too confusing. I mean, it finally makes sense by the end, but I thought there was just kind of a little too much plot and not enough character, as Sidney Lumet's movies tend to have. That said, Treat Williams is great in this. Pretty much everyone's great in this. Although I think said that at one point, like, Robert De Niro was going to play Treat Williams' part. Probably would have been better.
We also have to mention late actor Jerry Orbach is in this cop. Yeah. So obviously this is, Jerry Orbach to cops is like John Wayne to cowboys, right? So Jerry Orbach, this is before the Law and Order universe, right? So that whole journey began. So get to see some early Jerry Orbach in Prince of the City. So,
but yeah, this is still really good. But I mean, Sidney Lumet's done, like, I mean, Serpico's the most obvious comparison to Prince of the City.
Sure.
Serpico's like 6.9. It's probably like 3.5, 4. Like, it's within there.
Okay.
Still worth watching, but, you know.
Interesting.
I'm curious about what Greg thinks too, but I think that for me, I read it more as like a character study of the Danny character.
Yeah.
And I see it much more of like, he is like a junky, addictive, kind of a off the rails personality. And watching him, for me, I kind of watched it as him like trading one addiction for another addiction. And then going towards rock bottom, basically. Like, he's just spiraling towards rock bottom. So in some ways I can kind of see a Scarface like comparison here in a lot of ways, but I don't know. What do you think, Greg?
Well, again, in fairness to you and Eric, I haven't seen it for years, but years ago, I was a huge Lumet fan. So by then, maybe 15 years ago, I'd watch a ton of Lumet films. Not as much as Eric. Eric's watched, surprisingly, a lot of Lumet films. I know this about Eric. You've seen a lot of obscure Lumet films. But back then, Prince of the City was my favorite out of all of them. Of course, I hadn't seen The Pawnbroker at that time, but Prince of the City, I was putting it over Serpico, over Dog Day Afternoon. And one of the reasons why was because because of Treat Williams' performance and the fact that this movie, even though at its length, 3 hours, was really about the story of Detective Daniel Cielo, right? Treat Williams. And it's about how, well, without giving too much away, he thinks he's doing a good job, but who is he serving? Is he serving himself? Is he serving the department? What about his friends? Is he serving his fellow colleagues, who he spends more time than his actual family? So this is, this one I remember years ago breaking my heart and really loving it. I felt like this was a very great, underrated Sidney Lumet masterpiece. And I don't know if I can hold that. I do need a rewatch, but right now, I mean, based on how I felt 20, 15, 20 years ago, Prince of the City was my number one. My number one underrated Lumet film is Night Falls on Manhattan. Eric, we all talked about it before in Find Your Film. We all love that movie. But so, final thoughts on you guys and ratings. Eric, starting with you.
If this was anyone else, this would probably be a 4, 4.5 star movie. Since this is a Sidney Lumet movie, I'm probably going to go 3.5, just because, when you get like great filmmakers like Sidney Lumet, you kind of got a grade on a curve, and the curve isn't necessarily in their favor. But yeah, anyone else made this movie, this is a 4.5 star movie. But the Sidney Lumet movie, and this probably 3.5,
What about you, Louis?
if that makes any sense whatsoever.
No, I mean, I think it makes sense for you, Eric, because I think I'm putting words in your mouth, but I think you really loved Running on Empty as well. So there are a whole bunch
Oh,
of,
Running on Empty is great. I love that one.
So yeah, there's a lot of Lumet films. I understand
So
what you're saying. So it makes sense.
basically, Sidney Lumet set his bar right here. Prince of the City, it almost gets there. But see, everyone else's bar is right here. So you can see how much that clears other bars. It just didn't clear Sidney Lumet's bar.
You know what's interesting, Eric? Your 3.5 rating for Sidney Lumet's Prince of the City. A lot of OG cinephiles would take offense to that because they consider Prince of the City on a different level, on top tier Lumet. To your defense, though, I was actually listening to a whole bunch of people talking about Prince of the City in one of these, what are they called on Twitter or X, Spaces? I listened to a whole bunch of people talking about Prince of the City, right? And they were saying how boring that movie is. Just people just saying, "Oh, I didn't like it. I thought Treat Williams was really bad." So they were even going worse than you, Eric, on that. And 3.5 is still a solid recommend for a Sidney Lumet film or any kind of film. Bruce,
And
you're
on top of that, like Serpico's a 5, 12 Angry Men's a 5,
Dog Day.
Network's a 5, Dog Day Afternoon's a 5, Murder
There.
on the Orient Express is a 5, The Wiz is a 5, Running on Empty is a 5. Like
So I got you.
eventually gotta
Night Falls on
this one doesn't reach to those heights,
And
but
then
still really good.
Night Falls on Manhattan is like a 4 or 4.5 movie. The
That
pawn,
might be a 5 too.
I mean, The
That
Pawnbroker is a 5, right?
yeah.
So many amazing. Anyways, Bruce,
Death
sorry.
Trap. Death Trap's a 5. Oh, wait. No one ever listens to you guys never watched Death Trap.
I
Anyway,
know.
I'll
Sorry,
go
Bruce.
4.5 on this one. And I want to say, though, I want to mention the final shot, or the final little thing, little button on this movie is fantastic. And it
Yes.
reminds me, it doesn't operate the same way as Goodfellas, but it reminds me of that in the same sense that you go through this big, giant, epic thing, and there's this little thing at the end that just kind of puts the period on the sentence of where this person has ended up. It's pretty great.
Bruce, you actually paid money on digital to watch Prince of the City. Do you recommend it as a digital purchase for the bones you threw down? Is it worth a
Yeah,
watch?
for me, for sure it was. I would just my caveat would be younger viewers that don't really get into the vibe of the 70s, 80s movie style. There is a little bit of datedness there that might not appeal to them, and I think that's a lot of what you're seeing on the reviews that you were catching. The acting style, the kind of pace, the kind of the storytelling style, it's different than we do now. So for sure.
Okay, very good. Again, 3.5 for Eric. Again, Eric, though, you don't have to defend too much. I think that's still a solid rating because of all those other Lumet films you mentioned. And Bruce gives it 4.5 stars. That's Prince of the City currently on digital right now. And actually,
Also,
Eric has it on DVD, and I have it on Blu-ray. Yes,
Night
Eric.
Shift better than a Sidney Lumet movie.
Okay, don't go. Stop. Stop with the clicks. Stop with the clicks, Eric Holmes. I can't believe you just said that. Okay,
If
fine.
we're just going by stars, if that's the end all be all to everything.
Okay, Bruce Perky, what's in the bleeping box for
Oh,
next week?
yes. What is in
Yeah,
the
take
box? I
that
haven't
box.
done this for a
What's
while.
in the
Oh,
box?
it's in the box.
Yes.
Knock the dust off that box.
Bats came flying out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of spice and sand in there. This was suggested by Chris Brochu, which I'm not sure what filmmaker that might be.
Okay.
Yes, no. They suggested Mary Magdalene from 2018 by Garth Davis.
Okay. Mary Magdalene. That's... I'm Catholic. It's right up my alley. Oh, I forgot to mention Cabrini also comes out March 8th. How can I say? I can't believe I'm not doing my Catholic duty. But anyways, Cabrini also comes out March 8th. But most importantly, for next week, Mary Magdalene stars, I think, Rooney Mara, isn't it? And Joaquin Phoenix, possibly?
I think you're right.
Garth Davis, the person who directed, I think he directed that movie Lion years back with Nicole Kidman. So who knows? Might be an interesting movie. Mary Magdalene. See if it's any good. All right, guys.
I believe Kung Fu Panda 4 is coming out this weekend as well. So.
Oh, Kung Fu Panda 4 is coming out.
I know all of our listeners are like, we bear the lead. I'm sorry. You've been waiting all episode. What does Greg, Eric, and Bruce think of Kung Fu Panda 4 coming out? It will be in theater. So,
okay. Final thoughts, Eric, before we get out of here.
Yeah, check out the Film Vault. Hopefully, Anderson will give some updates on the short. It's looking real good, and can't wait to see more.
Okay. Yes, Eric, you had that privilege to actually watch the short, right? Yeah. Anderson gave you a look at what the short looks like, and he didn't even give me a look. What? Yeah, Anderson, what kind of...
Maybe I got to look, too.
Yeah, what... Oh.
Oh. Now we know who the favorite is. Who the favorite isn't.
How dare you, Anderson Coward. Yeah, you put Eric Holmes above me. Rightfully so, Anderson. But anyway...
Anderson, if you're listening, let Greg watch it, and he'll give it 4 stars, and that'll help the IMDb algorithm.
I'm an algorithm helper. All right. Helper and a better. Bruce Berkey, final thought?
I mean, just to go back to it, it's pretty obvious, but it's not often we have a big budget movie that's quite to the quality of Dune Part 2, and it's in the movies now. I mean, there's just no reason not to go see it, other than if you're a total agoraphobic person. And look, Greg is, and he went and saw it. So there you go.
Yes.
There's actually been a couple of those. You got the Dune 2, you got the Barbie, you got the Godzilla Minus One. Well, Godzilla Minus One, but still Godzilla franchise. Yeah. Like, it's pretty great that these big movies can actually be good.
Yeah.
Like, set that Sydney Lumet bar up high, so then when you get the 3.5, you're still pretty good. But you didn't clear that bar, but you know.
All right. Tell us which movies cleared your bar next week on Cinematics. And of course, here's Claire.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for joining Cinematics.